Welcome to Sustainable Forces, Arup's podcast about people joining forces for the planet. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Dickinson, and today we are recording from Arup's office in Auckland, Aotearoa, New Zealand. Before we start with our questions, I would like to open with Arup's karakia. Ayo ke runga, ayo ke raro, ayo ke tato katoa. Kia tō ai te mōri. Te mōri o ngā atoa, te mōri o ngā tipuna. Kia puta, ke te whaiao, ke te ao marama, whānau, whānau, haramai te toki, homie, huie, tai kie. So joining me today is Peter Reedy, Chief Executive Officer at KiwiRail, and Maiore Gunatilaka, who is Arup's New Zealand country leader. And we're going to discuss the question, is your commute climate proof? So thank you both for joining me today. Peter, I'm going to start with you. Welcome to our podcast. To kick things off, can you just share a little bit about your background and your role at KiwiRail?
Sure. I'm Chief Executive for KiwiRail. So we're the national rail operator, infrastructure operator. We have property, we have mainly a freight business, and we facilitate passenger transport across Auckland and Wellington. 3,700 kilometres of rail network, 4,500 people. We're a government-owned, state-owned enterprise.
Amazing. Thank you. And Maiore, it's great to have you on the podcast, finally. Can you share a little bit about your background and your role at Arup?
So I'm the New Zealand country leader for Arup, and so that means I have the accountability for the operational business here in New Zealand. And I have to work with our global business to deliver our global strategy on the ground.
So we're talking about making our transport system more resilient, and typically we talk about future-proofing our transport system. But the challenge is we know it's a problem now, and so maybe we should rename it now-proofing instead. How do cities make their transport system ready for today, for the big climate events that might occur in the very short term?
Well, maybe I'll kick off. For those of you who haven't been to this beautiful country, and you should, because we have great tourism train travel through Aotearoa, New Zealand. Look, we're a small country, two islands. Our railway network is very close to the coast. So, 30% of our network is exposed to flooding, 6% exposed to, river inundation. So the risks we are seeing in New Zealand around climate are increasing dramatically. So it is a real issue today. And as we explore today, we'll both talk about some of the projects we've been working on that have impacted our business. As we go forward, and we'll talk about it today, a lot of it is a journey of learning, particularly around understanding the asset condition data, really understanding the parts of our network that are exposed. For example, we have over 1,500 bridges in our network. Over 80% of those are over 80 years old. And 80% of those are wooden. It's all the 80s. But it's a very old network and subject to significant risk. So we're seeing this as a real live challenge and opportunity today to make our entity more resilient in the future. And that's part of the government investment that we've had over $10 billion invested in the rail network, partly to make it more resilient for the future.
So if I just build on that, Michelle, for me, I look at this as, climate disruptions are here right now. It's not something in the future. We have to have risk mapping and criticality analysis on our infrastructure assets, have a system view on our transport system, and also, in that moment, so people have multiple ways of moving, not just a single mode of transport. And that's for people and for goods. There's something about learning lessons from events in the past and making sure we adopt them as we design for the future and, ensure we're planning our townships in places where we're not going to have people washed away and people are in safer places and things are more resilient. So for me, we have to design for people and disruption and not just efficiency as we look at this climate conversation.
but everybody wants their sea view. So there's always a compromise. We know that natural disasters and extreme weather events are happening all over the world. You can't turn on the news now without something being on there. Here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, we had in 2016 the Kaikoura earthquake, and more recently in 2023, Cyclone Gabrielle. And every disaster is different. There's no rule book. Nothing's the same. But I know that Kiwi Rail and Arup were involved deeply in the response and the rebuild of transport networks after both of these climate events. So how do you even do that? How do you respond when the climate event happens and major transport networks that used to be operational don't even exist anymore?
Well, unfortunately, in this country, we have lots of practice. So, you know, I was chief executive when the Kaikoura earthquake happened. And, you know, within a month, we had combined with the National Road Authority, with the government, would put an alliance program together with partners, and we had, you know, brought teams together. And the whole purpose of that project was moving mountains to connect communities. So what's one thing we do very well in this country is we connect pretty quickly. We're a small country. We come together. We have a lot of experience in dealing with this. And particularly in those two events, Cyclone Gabrielle as well, we actually had governments that stepped in. And that made a big difference. And we had iwi that stepped in, which is local indigenous groups in New Zealand, and local councils that stepped in. So I think when it comes to a crisis and natural events, we do come together as a small collaborative country in a big way. And there has been quite a few case studies written on rapid recovery on some of these natural events, and they are used quite a lot for you know, when we have floods or you know, earthquakes or fires.
I think my observation, you know, I definitely agree with Peter. You know, what we did with Kaikoura was phenomenal, and I saw us come together again post Gabrielle. And I think for having a bit of a long-term philosophy and a long-term lens on not just build back better, but build back better for a longer-term view.
Built to last.
Built to last, yeah.
So we often talk in these events about assets. You know, we talk about operational systems and, you know, what are we actually physically rebuilding? But actually at the core of what we're rebuilding is connection to people. And so have you learned anything along the way about how do you prepare communities during these extreme weather events?
I think, Michelle, if I just talk a little bit about what we did around Cyclone Gabrielle and what we did with Kiwi Rail around that project when after the event there was a significant impact onto the rail assets. So we worked with a team on the North Auckland recovery program. And so we had our people, some of who might even be here, who were seconded into Kiwi Rail's team to support the recovery team. So we took people from a range of disciplines across our business. So our geotech team, structural team and water engineering all went in to help the Kiwi Rail team. And we, you know, worked across the program doing everything from a, you know, desktop assessment to a site inspection to prioritizing the culvert renewals on this North Auckland line. And it was a very collaborative effort. The team used a multi-criteria assessment approach in how they did the evaluations. And we realized our client had a limited budget and time. And so they needed to know answers quickly and they needed to work fast. So there was, you know, this had 1,000 culverts on this line. So it was very much about being pragmatic and getting the job done and having that urgency at the heart of how we got delivery underway.
Mm. Interesting story. We just spent, you know, $300-400 million on that line. It had just been finished 3 weeks, 4 weeks before. 230 slips. So the geotech in that part of our country is like yogurt, and it just completely destroyed the network. So yeah, the work you did to help us there better understand it. So now what we have to do is actually go back through that and say, how are we taking some of our funding we get per annum? We're investing at the moment about $90 million in our rail network investment plan for better resilience. And part of it is the culverts. So part of the big risk for us is flooding through culverts not being cleaned, not being maintained, not big enough. And we're starting to see bigger floods now. So that, the lessons I think we got out of that maybe on the North Auckland line, we had to take through the rest of our business because that was 18 months that it completely stopped the rail line. It completely damaged the road networks. You had more trucks on the road. So I think the government as well are also understanding the risk mitigation with both land transport networks coming together. And one thing we were not able to do on that, and we will going forward, is share the data on those assets with the Land Transport Authority as well. So that's got to be something we learn out of this, is how do we have ubiquitous data and we understand the asset condition so when we build back better.
And is that part of the challenge, that these agencies are all quite siloed?
Yes, they are. Although we're a small country, we do work together in various parts. So our funding will come through the government, it'll come through New Zealand Transport Agency, and we work together on that plan. And we're starting to share a lot more information around, the asset data strategy, for example. Firstly, we've got to get it right ourselves. And in fact, I was just in a meeting this morning on our asset data strategy around bridges and track and signals. So we've got to get that clear and consistent, and then that can help us when we have natural disasters, say working with ARIP around how we can share that data.
Amazing. We on the last episode, we were talking about Australia and high-speed rail, and one of the business cases they put through was what happens to our road if we don't put this thing in. And I think those contingency plans are not often what people think about. So look, you've both worked on so many interesting projects. We could talk all day about them. But do you have a favourite project or initiative that has maybe informed the way that you now think about transport resilience?
Maybe not a favourite, but maybe sharing a couple of global examples so you can get a perspective from a couple of other jurisdictions. So in the UK, we've been working with Network Rail. So we've been helping them shape their vision for a reliable, climate-resilient railway, railway by 2050. So in that situation, we did the vulnerability and criticality mapping tool. We developed this to identify and prioritize the resilience investments across their network. So, to your point, that whole digital piece, Peter, combining new and existing data in a geospatial format and getting that tool in place to enable proactive decision making that can seamlessly go ahead. So in these events, you're not caught out. And also in that program of work, we researched the current cost of weather-related disruptions and closed those data gaps and created the sort of reporting structures to build a sustainable business for them in how they integrate climate risk into how they make their decisions. So that's a little bit of an example from the UK. And then maybe another one coming to the US, just touching on California high-speed rail. So in that one, the team at ARIP, they're leading the climate resilience piece for California high-speed rail program. We're helping shape the policy and design responses to risks like flooding, heat, wildfires, and sea level rise. So looking across a range of these climate impacts. And we're supporting the development of a new climate risk policy and reviewing how the design, operation, and maintenance, to your point, Peter, can adapt to those future conditions. So this includes an updating the actual design manual for 2024.
Good examples. Be great to have high-speed rail in this country, wouldn't it?
Maybe, oh, we could really talk about that.
Look, a couple of examples. I've been involved in working in Asia, Australia, and New Zealand. I think a couple. Yes, we've talked about the Kokoda earthquake, which is in the South Island. It just completely split the country. But what it did was it brought everyone back to look at transport as a system. And I remember one of the government ministers said, "Peter, I now get it. I now get it when rail's not there. I understand the implications across the transport system." And that has started some thinking and some work, particularly around, as I talked about, asset data. But also that was a major program where rail came back quickly within 9 months, and it was actually helped to rebuild the road network as well. So it was seen as a get it up quickly, risk mitigation. Whereas initially when we started that meeting, it was like, oh, no, rail's gone, forget it. But actually, so that helped us think more about transport as a system. And the other large project we finished in Auckland about a year ago was a large PPP road here, 18.5, 19-kilometre highway called Pūhoro to Warkworth. And the reason why that was pretty special was for the first time ever, I've actually seen agencies and ourselves come together and actually invest in deep lift asphalt, invest in a different structural base for long-term resilience and reliability compared to, say, other roads in New Zealand that have had chip seal. So it was really taken a 25, 30-year view, and it's the first time I've seen that, and I think that was a learning that I think we've had as a country as to how we invest in our infrastructure and also the way we use technology to look at our batters or our slopes, looking at water flow. It was really, I think, a lot of lessons from various events we've had were taken into that project to look at how we design it for, as you said, Modi, for the future, for better. So, yeah, a couple of satisfying projects.
Great. And you two have worked together on some things as agencies. So this podcast is all about, we have this section called The Power of Partnership. And we have amazing stories about how people work together to solve challenges and how we are stronger by doing that together. So how important is partnering with other organizations to prepare our transport systems and our communities for what is next?
So maybe if I kick off with the partnership we've had with Peter, your KiwiRail engineering team. So we've been working with them over the past 5 years. We've got, folks in our audience who are working with them right now. And we've been delivering a range of track and civil asset renewal projects across New Zealand, across our major cities and regional areas. And these are assets such as turnouts, yards, sidings, level crossings and tunnels. So we have a close collaborative working relationship with the team, and this has been fostered on delivery, making sure we deliver quality work in a pragmatic way and really efficiently so as to improve KiwiRail's assets and the ability to provide efficient services for them to their customers. So yeah, that's a really important relationship for us, and we're continuing to work with that team. And I guess another side of the partnering, I think, which is very special for us in New Zealand, is our relationship with iwi and how we bring iwi into our projects and bring them into the decision making and how we take a project forward.
Yeah, look, I think particularly in this country, you're starting to see on all the projects I've been involved in, you can't do it without iwi engagement, local people on the ground, local knowledge, local engagement. And I think as a country, we've done that very well, and there's always areas that you need to develop. It's interesting, you talk about working with the engineering team, which is great because, one of the things we need to be better at as we go forward is being very clear on our, as I said, our asset data strategy, but sharing that with people like Arup and saying, what does that mean? What does that mean for our asset renewal investment plans? What does that mean for our maintenance plans? So sometimes, as a rail operator, you can get a little bit siloed. So I think in the New Zealand, we do have the ability to reach out more and actually have people like yourselves and iwi and local councils more involved in our planning, because largely our rail network is there to connect the country. So we need to make sure we've got partners involved in that. And we've got some great examples of, where we have done that with various local councils. A large part of the civil infrastructure cost base in New Zealand is delivered through local councils. There's 60, 70 of them, way too many. But anyway, that's another point. But their investment curve is really important. How we partner with them and people like yourself is an important part of the future. In fact, for us, not doing everything ourselves, actually bringing an outside and thinking into how we do this, which is what you've just talked about.
Mm. And Maiora, you sort of touched on this a little bit talking about iwi, but what have you learned from working with different communities? Have other people's perspectives shaped the way that you now view resilience?
It certainly has, Michelle. I think, a big thing around this is communication. People rely on transport, and so if it's going to be down or delayed or there are issues, they're communicating early and helping our client with the information they need to communicate early is really important. And then the other part of it is, this is not always about the big major CapEx upgrades. It's about, Peter talked about this earlier, good asset management, good operating procedures can make a huge difference. If you're doing the small things right now, it can help when the big things happen that it's not such a huge impact.
Mm-hmm. And look, it's true. I mean, particularly in metros, you know, metro rail globally around the world, is there's this renaissance on rail, particularly around metro, and it's happening in this little small country. You know, Auckland, for example, will probably go from 20-odd million passenger trips per annum to 50-60 million passenger trips per annum. And when you think about the partnership now, we're developing much stronger with, you know, Wellington Metro and Auckland Metro, the asset owners who are the councils, understanding the risk of the network. And quite often we won't look at risk from a passenger journey perspective. We'll look at it from an asset. But if you know, and in the discussions we've been having with local councils, particularly in Wellington, is, you know, there was one seawall out of Wellington that almost failed. And that just is a critical path risk to the community that would stop Wellington moving. And so sometimes we need to be better at thinking about the impact on customer journeys. And the partnership with the asset owner and the local councils, they are much closer to that because they're dealing with the passengers every day. And I think that's getting stronger. And we've got a shared risk model with both the metros in Auckland and Wellington, and that's helping us in terms of our investment plan with those partners.
Now, we're almost out of time. Sorry, this podcast always goes so quickly. But before we finish, we have this sort of, I call it the tips and tricks section. You've both been doing this for a while. You've probably learned many lessons along the way and maybe might do some things differently. So for those who are listening who might be trying to now-proof their project or future-proof it, or maybe think about their community systems or their assets, what is one piece of advice or one little bit of wisdom that you would like to share with them?
Oh, for me, it's, you know, it just comes down to your asset condition. And, you know, from a network perspective, where are we highly exposed on our network from a climate perspective? Where is that? And are we addressing that? Because quite often in a business like us, we can get the funding and we can try and, you know, peanut butter spread it. But no, where's your risk? What's catastrophic? What's your acute risk? Really understanding that and forcing the funding into that to at least mitigate risk going forward, I think would be one lesson that I've picked up.
I think then just like really dovetailing into that, you know, for us it's about how we help KiwiRail with these sort of questions when Peter raises a problem like that. For us it's about, you know, we're not designing infrastructure for infrastructure's sake, we're designing for the people that are using it. So, you know, keeping design and use at the heart of our thinking and making sure that we are bringing that through into the delivery of what we do.
Mm. And so if people are looking at this, New Zealand is a great place to start, right?
It's a great place to visit.
Great place to visit, but also...
And live.
Not trying to scare people off, but from an infrastructure perspective, we have some climate change challenges. We have some... You had a fact, Peter, about we are one of
those. We used to be just an earthquake country. We're now a flood risk country. So, you know, from a natural disaster perspective, we're right up there on the curve in terms of natural disasters around the world. And I know from an insurance perspective, you know, it's on the scale. You know, we're being looked at.
Mm. Yeah, we get the top prize for the things you don't want to get the top prize for right now. So, you know, looking at New Zealand from that context, we actually have a lot of lessons that we can share with others. And with that, I would like to thank you both for joining us today and sharing your insights. I think it's so interesting when you live in a country, you don't always see some of the lessons that we can share with the world and some of the amazing things that you two and your teams have been involved in helping rebuild the country after what has been felt like disaster after disaster sometimes. So thank you for that. Before we end, I'd like to close our session with a closing karakia. Kua mutu amatomahi mo tene wa. Mana kitia mai mato katoa. Umato hoi, umato fano. Aio ki te orangi. Thank you so much for listening in. If you have enjoyed this episode, don't forget, leave us a review and don't forget to subscribe to Sustainable Forces on your favourite streaming service.
Thank you.